Hey.
Blog Talk Radio.
Go, go. Nothing can stop me. I'm all the way up.
Hey, we all the way up. What's good? This is Hard to Guard Radio. It's your host, Rick Rivers. Got my man, Edgar Burgos. You there?
I'm here. I'm ready to rock.
All the way up. Hey, Jared Rudolph, you all the way up?
You know what, man? I feel bad because I don't listen to the rap music much anymore. So, you know, I don't even know how to answer that question. I don't know what song that was playing. I don't know.
Yo,
I'm
Jared,
feeling
you,
good, though.
Where you been at, in the cave, bro, in Connecticut?
No, I've been in the cave. No, let me tell you, first of all, I'm all the way in New York, bro. So don't get it twisted. I just don't listen to the music no more. I don't like the direction in which it's going. So, I choose not to listen, bro. So, I don't listen to the radio. I don't know what's new. I don't go to clubs no more. I'm a grown man.
I dig it. But even if you don't listen to the music, You still can put the word together all the way up.
Yeah,
like
I said, I mean, it sounds like it's all good. It's a good thing. I just, you know, I don't know the origins of it, so I can't, you know, I can't subscribe to or endorse anything that I don't first understand. Maybe I'll go give it a listen. But I don't listen to the rap music like that no more. I'm mature, man.
I dig it, man.
Brothers want you to drink Coke 45 your entire life. Nobody drinks that anymore. You know, so, like it's over. So, you know, things have their run. And the rap music had his run with me, but the run is over.
Hey, listen, that's Jared Rudolph, man. He has an eclectic background. You're not doing rap music like that. You listen to Smokey Robinson.
Give me Smokey any day of the week. While you listen to Drake, I'll take Smokey.
Yeah.
You can have these young Thundercats, man. I don't need them.
Hey, man. Hey, look, so we back, man. Did you guys, Jared, I know you said you don't watch college basketball either, because you understand who Jared Rudolph is, but did you happen to tune into the game last night?
I saw bits and pieces of it, mostly highlights, but no, I didn't watch.
Hey, Jared,
I watched
you missed one.
By far one of the
best games
of all finals, NCAA finals of all time.
But they say that about every game that's decided by 3 points or less. I mean, come on.
No, Jared, stop. You didn't watch
this is
the
a great game.
You didn't watch the game. From top to bottom, the game was very well played. First half, second half. It just wasn't because obviously the last two shots made the game, you know, epic, but that was a really well played game.
Hey,
take your word.
Great game, Jared. Great game. Lead seesaws back and forth. We talk about North Carolina heavily favored to win the championship. Villanova, even though as a 2 seed, somehow didn't seem to really get their due. And this, no matter how many games they won, you just still seeing them as the underdogs. I mean, they were comparing them to the 85 team who defeated Georgetown, and they were underdogs at the time. So
last night was a fluke if they're comparing them to that team, right?
Well, I wouldn't say it was a fluke, but I just thought that they were always kind of like the underdogs in the matchups, even though they were a 2 seed. But they had a great game plan, man. Great game plan.
They shot 58% yesterday. Let alone what they did on against Oklahoma. By 40, not over 60%, they played.
Got to come back to the mic. Got to come back to the mic.
Yeah, I can't.
So you got to give Coach a lot of credit.
Oh, yes, indeed. He definitely deserves a heck of a lot of credit, man. And
well, Jay Wright, Jay Wright's a good coach.
Jay Wright put on a very good plan. I think that there were a lot of things that he did in this whole NCAA tournament that kept him on that run. And you just got to get hot at the right time in college basketball.
No, they definitely, you know what I mean? I mean, Michael Page. I mean, the thing about yesterday's game, what I liked, was both teams. It wasn't like Kentucky last year was pretty much freshmen. These guys were 4-year players, Michael Page, Johnson, Jenkins, all these guys, it was two teams that were very well experienced. And I appreciated that for once, watching that type of game.
Yeah, I think on North Carolina you had some experience as well. So I think it was a good matchup. You got Page as a senior. You got a handful of guys that may be out of the out of college basketball now and entering their name in the draft. So it was a good matchup, man. I was excited watching the game. I'm not sure. I mean, people will say it's the best game of all time. I know, Edgar, you alluded to that. I'm not sure if I give it that much, because I happen to still be in love with that Duke-Michigan game and UNLV-Duke game. I'm sorry, North Carolina-Michigan. North Carolina-Michigan and Duke-UNLV.
Yeah, I mean, those are my top. I said Keith Smart would be my second. Again, when they are Indiana beat Syracuse, third will probably be the Chris Webber timeout game, and four would definitely be Duke UNLV, and the fifth would be Arizona Duke in '97.
Duke UNLV when UNLV blew them up by 30 in the championship game.
No,
you talk about the final
game,
four
Duke,
game.
When the final four. Sorry, when Duke beat UNLV.
Okay. The one that comes to mind for me, Arizona, Kentucky, I think it was 97. They went back and forth. It was a really good game. I think Arizona ended up getting them. Kentucky was trying to go back-to-back. If I'm not mistaken, I think Derek Anderson led them. That was a great game. Other than that, I can never get into, you know, the Fab Five, you know, had a profound effect on my life. So seeing them lose, you know, I still can't watch that game today. And I don't think it was a great game either. I just think, you know, it was an ending that, you know, that people remember, and you know that's why it comes up. But it wasn't a great game. Okay, game.
I think the ending of it, I think you're right, kind of made it to where it sticks in your head. It kind of resonates with you because of the ending they had. And
yeah, my boys beat themselves that night. North Carolina, they played North Carolina 10 times. They win 9. They beat them earlier in the year, the Maui Invitational. They should have won that game.
One of the things I respect about college basketball, which is crazy, like when we talk about Michigan, a lot of times when the team loses, you rarely remember who that, you know, the second place team is. With the Fab Five, you always remember that they, you know, they lost those two Final Four, those two games.
Yeah,
the impact that, you know, Webb and you know, the other four guys, Jalen, Juwan, Jimmy, and Ray, had on the game was so much more than a score, right? So, you know, that North Carolina team, outside of Eric Montross, you know, you couldn't get a whole lot of people that can tell you who the starting five was. You just know it was
George
North
Lynch.
Carolina. So,
George,
you know, the University of Michigan and the Fab Five, they were playing for something so much bigger and so much more profound. But those were the good old days when you actually can invest not only in teams but in college basketball overall, because guys stayed longer. And to be perfectly honest with you, they were better basketball players. You know, it's hard to invest in the college game this year because you do have some programs that they get guys to stay 3 and 4 years, and you get to know them and you get to invest in that team. But most guys are in and out so quickly that there's no point in making an emotional investment. There's no point in giving them your time because you just don't get used to them. So, me, I graduated from UCF, and, you know, we don't have a great basketball team. But for me at this point, I would focus more on my school than a team. You know, I still love the University of Michigan, but can't get invested because guys come and go so quick. You never know who it is that you're rooting for. And as soon as you think that you're going to take a step and next year may be our year, you know, the guys that are making up that thought process leave. So, you know, there's no point in me to, you know, keep giving these kids my time. And a lot of them really can't play. So,
Do you say the same thing, Jared, about NBA basketball? Because as soon as you get connected and you become a fan, free agency swoops up and takes
it's totally – I mean, because guys are staying, you know, in places longer than 1 year. I think that, you know, again, everyone knows I'm pretty tough on young guys. You know, I think these kids really need to stay in college a lot longer than they're staying. And, you know, some people say 2 years. I think a lot of them need 3 years because they're just not ready. They don't know how to play basketball, okay? There's so much politics in the high school game and the AAU circuit, and they're in and out so quickly. They don't learn how to play basketball. A lot of this stuff is based on athleticism and being able to bounce the ball, okay? So, you know, how I feel about the young guys coming in is that they're diluting the league because they're learning on the job. and it's not learning a system or learning how to be a pro. They're learning how to play basketball. So, you know, it affects the league, and it hurts guys that are building their resume and they're beating up on these teams that can't play. Young boys don't make young boys better. They don't understand the culture. They don't understand how to be professionals. I just really wish that they would opt to stay a little longer. I respect being able to leave when you want to leave, but I just wish that they would take the time. The NBA is not going anywhere. You know, take some time to cultivate yourself, to cultivate the asset, you know, in school. Learn about the business of the game. You know, get stronger. Work on your jump shot. Work on your ball and work on your defense. Work on your maturity. They just don't do it, and they're not ready. And, you know, I think it's really, really, really hurting the quality of the game. These kids can't play. They can run. They can jump. They cannot play.
Do you think that kind of – where does that start from? Because they're in institutions with great college coaches, supposedly, like Hall
of Fame. Right,
but
you don't have
coaches.
Time. You don't have time to – you don't really even have time to get to know a guy. Like, they're in and out. What are you playing, 30 games? Like, they're in and out. So you don't have time to put – how many games are average college? College teams are playing 30 games. Think about 30 games, man. They don't have them a long time. It's hard for any coach to develop a kid in 1 year. Any coach on a college level, okay? So the teams that have the most talent generally are going to be, you know, in contention. And, you know, guys like Jay Wright that, you know, had a team that had some seniors up there, he had an opportunity to develop those guys. But it's so hard to teach a kid how to play in such a short period of time because, look, if you're going to coach a kid, you got to coach him. You got to stay on him. You got to, you know, develop and work on him. You got to discipline him. But if that kid knows that all he's got to do, if you get on a midseason, all he's got to do is last 15 more games, and he starts to tune you up because he's going pro anyway, then it's hard to do your job. And it's tough. It's tough for these college coaches these days in these one-and-done programs, man, these one-and-done guys. And, you know, you feel bad because you understand that they got people behind them that want them to go to the league for their own personal reasons. Everyone's looking for crumbs. And they're not thinking long term. You know, it's not about the first contract. It's about the second contract and the third contract. These kids have worked their entire lives to give themselves a shot. So make sure that the shot is a good one. Don't rush them in because you don't want to go to work anymore. It's a really, really big problem. I have a major problem, whether it's college or pro, with, you know, hanger owners and, you know, onlookers and even representation coming in and feeling like they're entitled to the legacy and the hard work these guys have put in to put themselves in a position to earn for playing this game. Because at the end of the day, no one is thinking about, the guys on the peripheral, you know, who was your agent, who was your best friend, who was telling you, you know, what to do and where to go and everything else. People are looking at the player, and that sucks where at 40 years old you look back at your career and you say, damn, I wish I would have done things a little bit differently. I wish I would have stayed in school a couple of more years. I wish I would have stayed in this situation, but there's nothing you can do to change it. And hindsight is 20/20. I just wish that these young kids would take a little bit more time to get to know themselves, understand the people around them, understand what they're going to be asked to do, develop your game. If you develop your game and you're mature, you're going to be worth more money in the long run. And they just don't see it. Everyone's so quick to try to get that dollar that's not going anywhere. It's hard to invest.
Hey, I agree with you. I've seen a lot of that happen with kids getting the wrong advice. But sometimes, you know what, Jared, sometimes these organizations, these NBA organizations are to blame as well. They tell a kid that we're going to take you at 35 or we're going to take you at in the first round. And then things don't shake up ahead of it. Things change late game trades and things like that. And now these kids were promised that they were going to be taken at a certain position. And because of that promise, they entered their name in a draft and they rolled out with the agent because of the information that they received. Come to find out that the information was poor.
Well, you got to be real with yourself. If you're not a lottery pick, what are you coming out early for?
But how do you – who tells you that you're a lottery pick?
Listen, you know. You have a sense. You know. You know the hype machine behind you and everything else. And if you're a one-and-done guy, generally you're playing for a fairly well-known coach that can give you an idea. because these coaches, you know, they have a lot. They get on the phone. They make their calls. They have their connections. If an agent is telling you that, look, you're going to go somewhere in the first round, probably between 20 and 30, but what the hell are you leaving for?
So
what are you leaving school for to get picked 30th?
Why would Dakari Johnson come out last year?
I don't know the brother. I don't know. Maybe he thought something more was popping. And he's like, look, I mean, who don't want to be rich?
Because Calipari's a well-known coach, like you just said, using that example. Calipari's well, he would get
maybe
the right.
Maybe he got caught up. Maybe he got caught up in thinking that, you know, coming out of Kentucky, he would get caught up like everybody else. I mean, it happened to Terrence Jones, right? Terrence Jones didn't play a whole lot. He ended up going in the first round. He's in the league, and I would assume he's getting a check. So, like I said, man, if you're not going in the lottery, there's no reason to leave early. There's no reason to leave early if you're not going in the lottery, okay? And you have to have a sense of where you are. You got to be real with yourself. You know, guys got to take a look in the mirror and say, look, I need a little bit more work. And, you know, owners and GMs need to make it a little bit more difficult to get into the league. You know, you don't have to pick these kids if you don't feel that they're ready.
Agree. And somehow these kids, sometimes they get information and they get leads. Because they want to play in that league, they want to play in the NBA, and sometimes it's not just the hanger-ons and the parents. It's sometimes these agents and these people in the business that are giving these guys.
It's a combination. It's a combination of them all, man. It's a combination of them all, and this is what I mean about maturing and getting to know yourself. You can do that through college, so that you're able to stand on your own feet and look someone in the face and say, "Nah, look, I'm not going to do that. This is my career. This is my life. I worked too hard to get to this point, and I'm not letting anybody mess it up for me. I got to do what is best for me." And you can't do that a year out of high school. Most people can't. It's impossible. That's not the way the world works, that you know everything a year out of high school.
Well, to help these young men out now with this new rule where kids can kind of go in and kind of get a free look without taking an agent and be able to withdraw their name, kind of can give these kids the opportunity where if they're good enough, they can get into these camps, they can get into the combines, and they can kind of be able to go through the process. Now, if you're not even getting to the combine, that means that's a clear sense right there from the door that you're not going to probably get drafted.
Yeah, it's like stay, man, stay. Like, you don't – listen, you know, if you're a guy that's projected to go between 15 and 20 and you stay a year and you do what you're supposed to do, you have a – you know, you work hard, you have a great summer, you keep your nose clean, man, you can only go up, which means you're more valuable, you're going to make more money. Right, and not only that, you're going to be more secure, okay? You're not going to be one of these guys that gets drafted and all of a sudden you're getting traded, you know, the second year and you know, you move. Because, see, that's when it becomes tough to stick in the league, when you have to learn different systems and you go in different situations. So not only do you want to be physically and mentally ready as you can coming out of school, but you want to get picked in a position where there's some security there. Like, you're really going to have a chance to develop. Like, this franchise is looking at you as someone that they want to build around, or they want to use you to build around somebody else. And, again, a year out of high school, that's tough. That's tough.
That's
and in
tough.
Terms
you know,
of the college game, I think it hurts it. Because, one, and we talk about it all the time, but, you know, we focus on the city game. But I believe this to be true nationwide. I think the quality of basketball and the quality of teaching that these kids are getting coming up through the ranks is piss poor. It's piss poor. You got a lot of guys with shirts on to say coach that don't know nothing about basketball. Okay? And these guys are in a position, they're more street agent than anything else. I'll never call a high school kid out, but I was watching a game where it was a couple of highly ranked high school teams. It had one team that had like two or three guys going to a major university, and these guys can't play. All they do is come down and shoot threes and don't make them. And all you hear these commentators talking about is how good of a three. No, I'm a great shooter. These kids can't shoot. You got to make the basket to be a great shooter. And they're going to major Division I programs, and they can't play. They cannot play.
Mm.
Now, is it their fault? Now, look, somebody offers my son a scholarship and he can't play, I'm telling them, take it. Get the education. But, see, they're not going there to get the education. Basketball is no longer a tool to advance your life. It's a tool to get rich, in a sense, without using everything that it can do. Like, that ball can take you so many different places, but it can't pay for you to have a college education, because most kids are not going to make it.
Hey, Jared, I'm going to pause right there. I believe we finally have Mike James on the line. Mike James, are you with us?
How you doing?
Good, good. Mike James,
man.
You're
breaking up a little bit on me.
Is it Mike, you there?
Okay, he's coming in low.
Where they find you at,
man? They got you out in the caves?
Excuse me?
I said, we've been looking for you, man. We had to go in the caves to get you.
I said when I finished playing, I made the decision, to finish. It had nothing to do with my age. It had nothing to do with my body. It just had everything to do with if you're working and you're not getting paid for it, it's just a hobby. And so, I was just tired of everything that, the game was about. But at the same time, I love it because I did say, I'm going to have a goal for myself. I'm going to be at 50 with a six-pack. I said, I refuse to allow myself to blow up like I've never played a sport before in my life. I said, I'm going to make sure I at least stay in shape. So I'm definitely enjoying my family. But it's not that I turned my back on the game, but I had so much love. You know how it's almost like dating a beautiful woman and, someone you really cared for. And you just got to you got to erase her telephone number. You know what I'm saying? You got to cut up the pictures. You just got to totally just turn your back. You can't see them nowhere. You see them in the store, you're going to be at their house later that day. You know what I'm saying? So, I just had to do it. It's over.
No doubt.
I always said, when I'm done with basketball, no one can tell me when I'm done, but when I'm done, I'm going to take my shoes and I'm going to tie them up and I'm going to put them on the wire. And I can seriously say that, I exerted all I could out the game and I was humbled and grateful and blessed by the game. And I appreciate everything that the game had to offer me. That's the reason why I played so hard, because that was my way of saying thank you. You know what I'm saying? Back to the game. It was like, the only thing that I can give back to the game is play with my heart, play with my emotions on my shoulder. But because the game saved my life and made so many dreams of mine come true, this is how I can say thank you. Don't keep the game.
No doubt, Mike. No doubt. Mike, as you talk about retirement and that next facet of your life, we've been talking about Kobe Bryant, who's actually coming within one more week away from retiring, and I know you playing in the NBA have been involved in a lot of big time Kobe moments. What's your thought about Kobe retiring?
I'm just a little disappointed in the way he went out. He made it almost like a circus act. What I mean? Like, he lost his whole competitive nature, and he just accepted failure, and he just said, I'm just going to go out, shake hands, kiss babies. Because his career was greater than that. His career, he was such a Michael Jordan clone that MJ would have, you would have had to break both the MJ legs for him to go out, as a joke to himself. But at the same time, to give the credit to himself, he deserves this season. He deserves to just sit down and just say, I play when I want to play, have some fun. And he emulated the best player to ever play the game. And if you're going to be like anyone, why not be like the best? If you're going to, try to emulate anyone in life, don't mock somebody that's doing nothing. At least mock someone that's, is successful, and they're building a foundation that, you feel like that's a trail. You can be a trailblazer yourself, but at least you have a ground point that someone has blazed first, and you can take it just a step further. But, he did it for Michael Jordan, so that to itself, it shows his competitive nature. It shows how great of an athlete he was, but how hard he worked. And hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. Can you imagine when talent works hard?
Exactly. Hey, Mike, I want to ask you a question out of that, right? You were in that game. You played for the Raptors when Kobe scored the 81 on y'all. You had 26-10. I'm not going to hide your numbers on this show. You put your numbers there. But tell us something that people might not know about that night when Kobe had 81. What was the locker room like when y'all came in there? Y'all were winning at one point.
Yeah, we were winning. You know what the most disappointing thing for myself was that I took from that game is I took away my own aggressiveness in the second half. I said I'm going to let my teammates get involved. I said I'm going to start getting Chris the ball more. You know, I'm going to get Jalen the game. I'm going to get Jalen in the game more. You know, instead of just, but at the same time, because of my aggressiveness in the first half, the ball was moving and people was getting touches because I was getting assists. And so that was the thing that disappointed me the most is the fact there's two things. One is the fact that, you know, I allowed myself to lose my aggression. And also, two, I didn't guard Kobe not one possession. And if I'm a defensive, I went to Sam Mitchell and asked him, I said, Coach, let me guard Kobe. You know, at this time, he had about maybe 55. And Coach was like, no, I don't want you to get in foul trouble. And I'm sitting there like, yo, are you serious right now, man? This dude is worried about me getting in foul trouble. And we're getting our brains battered in. And I believe that if I would have guarded Kobe, he wouldn't have scored 81. It would have probably been about maybe 60 or 65. It would have been something to talk about, but it wouldn't have been nothing to put on no damn the blacktop, the old games, hardwood classics.
The hardwood classics. That was definitely a great game, and you know, I always like.
No, he's
amazing,
man. He's amazing. You can't take nothing away from him. You can't take, you know, he deserves everything that has, every accolade that has came his way. He's won championships, you know, with different teammates. He's proven himself. You know, the only thing that I didn't like about him was his attitude. I think that he could have been more of a leader to his teammates. I think his teammates should have learned more from him, and he should have been more willing and open to help these guys, you know, grow. And not just show them one side of him, but be able to just, if this is a fraternity and guys are supposed, the problem with the NBA is, you know, everyone, it's just like, and it's our black culture at the same time. Is, you know, everyone only individually want to have success. But there is no other race that don't try to go into business together. There is no other culture that will not, you know, from the Mexicans living in one house all the way until they own the whole block together. You know, and they putting about five families in that house to, you know, the Asians, when they're getting together, they're coming together in herds and they're spending their money. We're the only ones that want to have individual success. We're the only ones that don't want to, you know what I'm saying? There is no reason that athletes shouldn't be owning teams because there's enough money amongst, you know, the athletes getting a group together. And now you having a $1 billion group you know, backing you, and they're going to validate, and it's the athletes that validate you, but because everyone wants to have the success themselves, you know, there's no real corporations, there's no businesses coming up from the athlete, because the athlete basically just want to say, I want to do it, I'm going to have the success. And it's like, dummy, if we're a fraternity, well, then we're supposed to be using each other, and we're supposed to be willing to want to help each other grow and grow together. But because of the selfishness and the greed that this game has always, you know, partaking us, is that's the thing that bothered me the most about Kobe, is that how much more valuable he could have been to these kids and these young guys and even these older guys that he played with.
Hey, Mike, you know, we had just one more. We had Smush Parker on this show before, and you, and I'm not sure if you know about the rift that kind of divides those two, but he alluded to some of the same things that you were saying, and I don't want to kind of be on the show and damage Kobe's legacy because he's definitely a talented player. But some say that he alienated his players, and he was more about himself. Anything that you've learned to kind of attest to that? Mike? Do we still have Mike on the line? Okay.
I think we might have lost him. The connection wasn't great. There's a lot of static on this end.
Yeah, it could have been. I like what Mike James was saying, Jared, just in terms of, and I hope we get him back on the line to kind of address that question. But he's saying a lot of positive things to how guys can kind of pool their money together to really kind of empower them as a group.
Yeah, I mean, 31 minutes isn't long enough to get into that a particular subject. There's a lot of different things that we can do as a community, but in saying that, there's also a certain, you know, education, a certain desire that is needed that, quite frankly, you know, isn't readily available. You know, guys are individuals because they're learning individually how to do things, right? It's complicated, and it's not an excuse. It's complicated. 31 minutes isn't enough time to go through something like that.
You learn, and you learn individually, but at the same time, you know, there's no one teaching. There's no one really teaching. It's like the bad veterans is teaching the young how to do it all over again, and it's being recycled, and it's only getting worse because the rules are changing. You know, you see somebody like the young kid from the Los Angeles Lakers do that to Nick Young. You know, it's just like there's no more values, there's no more rules, and so because these kids are reckless and they ruthless, you know, at the same time they mean no harm. But now they're learning the game from these veterans that are not teaching them the right game. And so it's only getting worse.
My thing is not to cut you off. It's like, look, I just think all in all, you know, what Nick Young is, what, 30 years old, right? Or is he not even that old yet? So, look, okay, so he's 30 and the kid Russell is 19. But young guys are different, right? This age of young guy is just a different breed. They're different than me when I was 30 or when I was 19. And look, I wasn't perfect. But it's just a different breed of young guys. And I think across the board, it can be agreed that these young guys are less willing to listen to anything. And whether that's athletics, whether that's street knowledge, whether that's regular knowledge, whether that's advice on how to deal with your women, whatever the case may be, these young boys think they know a lot more than what they know. And they are prepared to learn the hard way when they don't have to. And just my generation wasn't like that. Your generation wasn't like that. So we respected the guys that came before us. A lot of these young boys coming in, and they don't want to hear what these old heads are talking about.
But you got to understand, though, you know, there was a thing called schools of hard knocks that, you know, if you was a knucklehead and you had to get bumped upside the head, you was at least tough enough to be able to accept what is being taken, what is happening to you right now, and grow from it. But these kids are not tough. They didn't grow up from a school of hard knocks. They grew up from private and prep schools. And so all they've ever had was really silver spoons in their mouth. But all they are is successful, you know, athletes, and they don't have, but at the same time, they all know gang. They all banging. They all down with a gang. They all know how to rock it, but want no problems. And so if you can't grow up acting, you can't dance with the devil and not get burnt. You know, and that's what these kids don't really understand, is that everyone wants to act tough, everyone wants to be a rebel, but when it's time to eat, when it's time to go get the food like a lion, you know, they like, whoa, like, huh? You ain't gonna cook it? Like, what you mean? You know what I'm saying? I'm supposed to do what the lions do. I don't wanna do that. You know, and so but they want to live the lifestyle. And that's where the problem is. Rap music was the worst thing that ever happened to basketball.
Hello?
Yeah.
Mike, Sean?
Hello? I'm sorry.
We lose him again?
No, I'm here.
I think we lost
Hello?
Edgar. And Mike, you still there?
Hey, we're having a little bit of technical difficulties right now, Jared, it looks like. Between
Who's
Mike
on
and
the
Edgar.
Line?
I'm here. Yourself is here. We're still live. And I believe we're going to have Mike rejoin the line once again along with Edgar.
Listen, I feel what Mike is saying. Like,
yes.
I just think that, I just think that the generation is different. That, you know, they're different.
I'm not going to call them soft, but I think this generation is much different.
Much different than,
Jared,
than the generation that came before.
Jared, I was just
saying, soft.
Mike, do you feel like these college players should stay like 2 years in college?
Man, they should stay. I think that they should stay because it's more than just about basketball. And just because they're gifted and talented enough, they still need to go to school and get their degree and get a degree that means something. Get it in engineering. Get it in business marketing. You know, really focus, really, you know, value in these kids' lives. That's how you give back to the kids. Just really, you know what I'm saying, make them stay at least 3 years, 4 years. Make them graduate. Like, you must graduate. Like, you got to pay your dues. There's rules to this thing. Even though, like, the kids leaving early is only hurting them, man. You're giving them one option. You're not really caring about them. And so if you really care about them, you'll make them really focus on trying to be a man, growing from a little boy to a young man, to a man. And that's what college does to you in those 4 years. And I think that they're hurting themselves by missing out on, they say, college years are supposed to be some of the best years of your life. So you're going straight from a little child in high school to a grown-ass man now. I'm sorry if I curse, because you now have money. And because you have money, you're a man now because responsibility comes along with it. And you're not ready for that responsibility.
Hey, Mike, I'm sure, I know you did 4 years in Duquesne. That college experience is valuable. It's one that went through it. I'm not going to talk about the redemption prep years when you used to stack the barrels on the top and work on your jump shot. You didn't think I know about that, Mike James? You didn't think I know about that? We ain't gonna tell the people how you used to jump off the wall at redemption prep to practice and how you could dunk. I ain't going to tell the people too much about you, Mike, but I know a little.
Ooh, look at you. Look at you.
I know a few things. Hey, but
don't nobody know about that unless they was there for that one, man.
Hey, I know a couple of things, Mike, and I didn't go to redemption prep. But fine. I know you,
man. Some of the greatest ball players in New York City, man, went to Redemption Christian Academy, man. You know, like, it was amazing. There was a kid named Mike Estevez. He was from Queens. He was the next version. He was the next generation Kenny Anderson. He was Dominican. This kid was one of the most amazing basketball players I've ever seen play the game. He used to go to class with his bathrobe on and with a thermometer in his mouth, talking about he's sick, he don't feel good. He never wanted to do nothing. He never wanted to listen. But when he was on that court, it was the most beautiful thing to watch. But he really had no real values for his life and for his future. And so that's the problem. You can't just think that it's just about the game. It has to be something that drives you every single day, you know, to want it more. And I'm not supposed to, you know, have the success story that I have. But, you know, sometimes a drive, a hunger is more important than a skill.
Mike, hey. I wanted to ask you, going back to what you were saying about Kobe, if you were starting a franchise and you had to pick between Kobe, Shaq, Duncan, and Garnett, I think those guys are the four most preeminent players in the post-Jordan era, who would you go with and why?
Shaq, you'll never get that ever again. He was a giant ballerina. Like, are you kidding me? Like, he was the most graceful. He had the best footwork, and he was over 300 pounds. And they used to get mad at him because all he wanted to do was dunk. Like, he was the most dominating player that ever played the game. And so, you know, you can defend a guard because you can find somebody to be able to guard another guard that's that size. You can defend a wingman, you know, because you can find somebody to be able to guard him. But when you're the biggest dude on the court, but you move like a guard, are you kidding me? Like, that's equivalent to being a defensive tackle that run like a 4-4. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just not normal. And so, of course, it's Shaq.
Hey, Mike, I just want to switch off to the Chicago Bulls since you played there, you know, last season. You played there a couple of times and you played with Derrick Rose. One, do you feel that Derrick Rose will ever regain that MVP form that he had? And do you feel like this is probably like Derrick Rose wants to get out of Chicago?
You know, I just think that D. Rose is a really good basketball player. He's a really good athlete. But I think he's trying so hard to prove that he is who he is that he's not playing free. You know, and it's so difficult when you don't have a free mind on a basketball court and you're trying hard. See, there's a difference between just trying and just letting it happen. You know, when he was in MVP form, he was just out there playing, and whatever come to his mind, he would just do. Now he's trying so hard to prove that he's this great player that he's forcing so many things. He's forcing himself to try athletic moves, and it's just not, you know, but at the same time, it's not that he lost a step, but I think he's lost a step of confidence because of those injuries. And because of that, he's reluctant to explode as fast or as much as he used to in the past. So he's depending on jump shots. He's depending on skill work, where skill work isn't what got him where he's at. Athleticism got him where he's at. And if he doesn't play with his athleticism, then he's playing below average.
Yeah, so and then as far as, like, do you feel like Tom Thibodeau was big? You know, obviously, you know, they both are struggling this year and they might not make the playoffs. How big of a difference do you feel like Tom Thibodeau, since you, you know, played with Tom, how good of a coach is he? And, like, did you get along with him?
Tom is a very good coach. You know, the great thing about Tom Thibodeau, they say offense wins games, defense wins championships. Tom on offense just wants guys that's going to play. You know, he's going to put them in a position to be able to be successful because of the game plan, but he wants some guys to take over. That's why six men and the guards normally, like the John Lucas, Nate Robinson, you know, these guards coming off the bench, Aaron Brooks, he loves these type of guards because he'll just put the ball in their hands and run pick and roll. But and at the same time, if they scoring, he going to keep the ball in their hands and just let them play, but he would not go against his defensive philosophy. You know, it was always his defensive philosophy never changed, and that's why he was always kept in the games. They always sometimes had issues scoring the ball, and they've had issues, and he's had issues in the past of scoring the ball, but he was always one of the top teams in the NBA in defensive possessions. And
hey,
defense will always keep you in the game.
Always, always. So I'm going to talk about defense, Mike, because I know you lock up. And before we let you off the air, you've watched the. I'm sure you're watching Golden State. You're seeing the mouse on what they're doing. You're watching Stephen Curry. If Mike James was playing right now, you'd have to probably guard Stephen Curry. Could you lock up Mike?
Stephen is not. Stephen. See, you know the problem with people, the way they play defense. They play defense with emotion. Like I study you while I'm playing against you. I want to know what your tendencies are. See, people don't understand that Stephen Curry is still, even though as great of a ball player he is, majority of his moves is to the ball with his right hand. So I would understand that. So two things I would figure out that I would try to take away from him. I would say he only going to be able to play with his left hand. So if he killed me, it's going to be left-hand floaters all day and left-hand layups and moves going to his left because he's stronger when he has the ball in his right hand. So I'm taking his right-hand drives away from him. I'm taking his right-hand moves away from him, and I'm forcing him to have to play inside the paint. And I'm praying for my big man to please trap every single time Steph has the ball, help me. And every time Steph is off the ball, I'm going to beat him up. Like, I'm going to beat him up. I'm going to be not physical with him while the referee is watching, but every time he goes set a screen, I'm going to hit him. Every time he go move in a corner, I'm going to bump him. I'm going to push him. I'm just going to always be annoying to him. Like, I'm never going to let him breathe off the ball. See, people let him breathe off the ball and then try to be physical with him on the ball, and the referees are calling the whistle on him every time you touch him. You ain't supposed to touch him when you playing him one-on-one, and now you supposed to already have done your job. He's supposed to have a frog in his arm by the time he catches the ball. Like, he's supposed to be so mad at you. By the time he catches the ball, he's supposed to be so mad at you, all he want to do is kill you and go one-on-one right now. And so the thing that you have to do is be able to play a mind game, be physical, and be smart at the same time. So that's the way I would have played Steph, and I would have lived with that philosophy right there. And he would have, I would have tried my best to take away those things from him. I'm picking him up at half court. You're not taking two dribbles over half court and surprising me because you're shooting that. I already know you're going to shoot that, so I can't give you them shots. You shooting them shots at a high rate, which means that that's basically as good as a shot as a layup is to you.
Hey, Mike James,
in saying that, Steph could have played in any era. Steph is that skilled. He could have played in the 60s, the 50s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, 2010s. He could have played in any era of basketball because he can handle that basketball. And when you can handle that basketball, you can back anybody up off you. And when you can back any physical defender off you, and you got a super soaker, jump shot, man, listen, you already know he has a super soaker. Like, I've never seen a person that every time you shoot the ball, you think it's going in. You know what I mean? He's the greatest shooter to have ever played the game. And he have an and-one mixtape handle. How hard is that to defend? Just think about it. Most ball handlers can't shoot. All they can do is get to the paint. Imagine you got to play me 40 feet out.
Hey, that's
like,
tough.
That's
crazy. Well, we're going to wish you luck on trying to get him going left, though. We're going to wish
you
luck.
One would know, so no one's going to have my back on that right there. But it's the reason why they call me a pit bull, a.k.a. the Amityville Horror.
No doubt.
That ain't
doubt.
For my
offense. We definitely know that. Hey, Mike James, man, look, I'm glad that we finally got up to you and we was able to share some words, man. That was good words.
Thank
here
you.
Institute,
thanks
right
for
here.
Answering, Mike.
Man, it's love. What did you say?
I was about to blow up your phone tonight.
Oh, it's all good. I'm glad that I apologize about last week, man. I'm glad that I was able to share this with you guys.
Thanks, Mike.
No doubt. Appreciate you, Mike James.
Yes, sir. Y'all have a good one.
You too. Cool. Mike James, former NBA standout on the line with us. I believe we're going to eventually be joined by Spiro Dedes. Did I pronounce that correct, Edgar?
We lose Edgar again?
You know, Edgar be going in and out, man. Edgar going to party line. So I believe he's getting ready to get Spiro on the line with us. But, hey, what do you think? You see Mike James play? He's standing there against Steph Curry.
No.
But I don't think
he backs down. I mean, but I can't
definitely
say any of these guys. I mean, it's backing down, and it, you know, there's just not being able to hold a guy. And you know, not only does Steph have the shot, and he has the handle, the strength, the size. But his confidence is sky high, and there's nobody doing anything to make him doubt, you know, his shot, his hand. Like, nah, you know, respect to Mike. Nah, he couldn't do a damn thing with Steph. Nobody can. You know, hard pressed to find somebody to do something with that kid. Nobody can do anything with that kid right now. He's playing on a whole different level.
Different level. And we're going to get Spiro on the line with us in a few seconds, Jared. But I was at a party with some of the old heads the other day, and one of them was saying, hey, look, the one guy that comes close to Steph is Pistol Pete. I'm not sure if you've ever seen Pistol Pete footage, and I haven't seen enough of it. But they're saying that Pistol Pete was Steph a long time ago, averaging 40 in the league.
Listen, man, listen. We've never seen anything like Steph Curry. We've never seen anything. Now, you know, because of the way the game is played, could some kid go out there and find a shot as good as Steph? And sure. You know, you don't need to be 6'6", you know, 215 from North Carolina to do that. So, yeah, in theory, I mean, look, Kobe was, cosmetically, he looked a lot like Jordan. out there, you know, not the same effectiveness, but cosmetically he looked the same. So you could get someone that looks like Steph Curry. But to this point, we've never seen anything like him before, you know, Pistol Pete or, you know, anyone else. Like, this kid is an anomaly. You're not supposed to have them both. You're not supposed to have the handle and the shot that he has. And Pete, with all due respect, didn't have the shot. He did not have the handle. Now, he was a prolific scorer, and he certainly could handle the ball. But, nah, he was not Steph.
Well, nope. he averaged 40, and they didn't have three-pointers back then.
Well, he was a great scorer. I just say he was a great scorer, and he was a great player. No doubt about it, as was Natani Archibald. As, you know, there have been many of them. He just wasn't Steph.
But you disputed his handle, though. I thought
I said he don't have Steph's handle. A lot of people don't have Steph's handle. Dame Lillard don't have Steph's handle, but he got a handle. Kyrie's got a crazy handle. It's not Steph's. I take Steph. Isaiah Thomas had a crazy handle.
You put Steph's handle above Kyrie Irving?
That's what I said.
Oh, man, I don't know.
But I know.
Kyrie's
handle is nice. It's tight. It's tough. All right. Listen, man, Steph's on a whole different level. Steph's doing everything. He's doing everything better than every other guard in the league, with maybe the exception of passing. You might find someone that passes the ball better than, you know, Ricky Rubio's out there. But, nah, Steph is handling it better than everyone. He's shooting it better than everyone. He's doing everything better than everyone else right now, man.
Offensively, but defensively, he's not on that. He's not
there. But, you know, sometimes the best defense is a good offense.
Oh, yeah, you outscoring folks, and that's exactly what Golden State is doing. What do you think about Scottie Pippen's, you know, as they're embarking on his record? Now you start to get some of the old Chicago Bulls, Michael staying silent, but Scottie Pippen rises up and says, hey, that Bulls team would smack that Golden State team, and Scottie would step out and defend Curry. I almost agree. I was a big Bulls fan.
That would be tough. They match up with them. Look, that Chicago Bulls team is the best we've ever seen to this point. Now, you know, Golden State gets it done tonight. They're at 70. They're now, if they can complete this thing and win the championship, they are in the conversation for the greatest single-season team of all time with the Chicago Bulls and the Lakers that won 69 games. It was in the 70s. You know, and then you have the Bulls team that won 69 games following the 72. I'm taking the Bulls. I'm always, anytime Michael Jordan is involved, I'm going with Jordan.
I'm going with the Bulls as well, man.
Is it 4-0? Nah, I mean, if Seattle can, you know, get two off, I mean, you know, look, it's, you know, there's some people that think that the Bulls might have taken their foot off the gas for those two games. But if Seattle can get two games, or far be it for me to say that, you know, Golden State couldn't get a couple. So, but no, I'm going with Chicago. Y'all, you know, that 72-10. I haven't seen many teams that can beat that Bulls team.
Jared, your opinion, and I have a strong one. Allen Iverson being inducted to the Hall of Fame.
Well deserved.
Well deserved.
Look, all because I wouldn't build my franchise around him. Don't mean that I don't understand. Look, he was a bad man. Like, I mean, the kid, he could go out there and get it done, and he played with his heart. I just don't think that. I think he cheated himself in terms of, you know, his reluctance to become a professional, especially later in his career. But, you know, in terms of, you can't knock what he did. He was a great player. He's just not the guy I'm going to build the franchise around. But, I mean, he's a Hall of Famer. No doubt about it. I think the one that's questioned in all of this would be Yao Ming.
I agree. So we're on the same page.
Yeah. So it's like, all right, well, here's my thought. You know, a guy that has less than 10,000 points. And, look, he made 8 All-Stars. He had an entire country voting for him, and you cannot knock him. And, you know, people say, well, if he didn't get hurt, a lot of things could happen. But, you know, and I had the conversation with a few people today. Grant Hill can punch his ticket. Tracy McGrady can punch his ticket. Was another one that was in there. You know, guys like Jason Kidd, you can punch your ticket. Hell, Joe Johnson can punch his ticket. If you let Yao Ming in the Hall of Fame, you've now opened up the floodgates for a lot of guys that have a legitimate argument. But here's the question that I will have. Okay?
Joe Johnson's not a Hall of Famer.
If Yao Ming is a Hall of Famer, if Yao Ming is a Hall of Famer with less than 10,000 points, how is Joe Johnson not? He changed nothing. He changed nothing. He changed nothing at all.
No, I disagree with that.
What did he change?
Listen, Jared, I'm not going to advocate for Yao Ming to be in the Hall of Fame. I don't think he should be there. But I will say he can be there because if you say he didn't change anything, he was a big linchpin to making the NBA global.
The NBA was global when the Dream Team started.
They had a presence. No, Jared, I disagree. They had a presence, but Yao Ming influenced the entire country. We would say that's where they wanted to be. Their presence wanted to be in China. That's exactly what NBA wanted to be.
And that means that a guy that scored less than 10,000 points in his career is a Hall of Famer?
I will tell you this, Jack. I will say I don't agree with it.
He was at a point in time, he was the second best center in the league behind Shaq.
Yes,
a guy that has a career average, he's 7'6", he has a career average under 10 rebounds a game? That guy? Chris Webber can punch his ticket. And here's the very interesting question about a guy like Yao Ming, because you're saying that he gets in because of what he did for the game internationally. Is that a distinction that's only going to be granted to foreign guys that come over and play in the league? Or is a guy like Stephon Marbury, who has almost 20,000 points, made two All-Stars, two-time All-NBA performer, bronze medalist, okay, All-American high school. I want to say he was All-American in college. I might be wrong there. But he's gone over to China and done great. Is he now in the Professional Basketball Hall of Fame like some of these guys? Or is that a distinction that's only given to foreign players that come over here? See, this is why you cannot let anyone in the Hall of Fame, because if Yao Ming deserves to be in the Hall of Fame because of this appeal, him bringing eyes of China over here where he had a fairly mediocre NBA career, then I'd be damned if Stephon Marbury ain't a Hall of Famer based on everything he did in the NBA and what he's doing over there in China. You got to be really, really careful when you let guys in. That's not a distinction that you can only grant to foreign players coming here. It has to be something that's seen across the board. Okay, Yao Ming is not a Hall of Famer. He's not.
I would agree with you on that, Jared. I don't think he should be in the Hall of Fame, but I wouldn't say that he's done nothing for the league to justify why they put him in. Now, I will say that even though Stephon is, and I don't know this, I will say, just my opinion, as much as he's done in China and as much as notoriety he gets, I still don't think he's as big as Yao Ming in China.
It's not about being as big in Yao Ming. It's about a collection. It's a collection of accomplishment that goes on your resume. And that resume is presented to the Hall of Fame board, and you have to make a decision. Yao Ming's resume is not as good as Stephon Marbury's, and it ain't as good as Joe Johnson's. Like, it's not. So if you talk about how Joe has more points, Joe has more points, more rebounds, more assists. He's played longer. He was more important to his team. Come on, man. What are we talking about here? Yao Ming was supposed to be a lot of things. What he was serviceable. He was a serviceable center. He was never dominant and great. He was serviceable, man. He was serviceable. Nah. Everyone was always waiting for Yao to take that next step, and then the injuries hit. Now, Dirk is great.
Jared, this is another debatable point. I happen to believe in Yao Ming's 6-year career, he might have been better than Dwight Howard.
Ah, man, that's garbage. That's garbage. Listen, so here's the thing. You take Yao, I'm taking Dwight. I'm getting 3 defensive player of the year. Should be 4. The one they gave Tyson Chandler was nonsense. He should have won 4 in a row. 8 legitimate NBA All-Star games. He took the Magic to the NBA Finals, followed up the year after, took him to the Conference Finals, but has been out of the second round numerous times. His playoff numbers are off the charts. The Houston Rockets went to the damn Conference Finals last year with this guy. Y'all got out of the first round one time in his whole goddamn career. And you're talking about you're going to take him over Dwight Howard? Are you out of your mind?
And a matchup with Dwight Howard and Yao Ming, both in their prime.
I'll take Yao Ming, I'll take Dwight, and I'm winning each and every time. I understand people don't like Dwight. Dwight was a monster, an absolute beast, a beast for real. Not no fake beast. Dwight was a beast for real. A real beast. 6'10", getting 14 rebounds a game. Y'all couldn't sniff that. He didn't even have to jump to get the ball. You kidding me? You take your...